Hope you all had a good night. It's good to be here still, and we're staying at a hotel. What's the name of the hotel? The Marriott, and it's wonderful. Just it's always nice to sleep in a different bed and with the nice cushy pillows. And my only complaint was the towels were so thick that I couldn't pack them all into my suitcase. And so, but you can't have everything. So. I hope you guys are having a good time. Again, just as a reminder, we're going to go over a lot of stuff today, a lot of more practical things, maybe a few more things that will be a little bit more challenging, and you might have different thoughts on things, and that's fine. Again, we're just going to encourage you to apply as God leads. You don't have to do everything the way that we would do them, but we want to encourage you guys and help you and just share things that have been helpful to us, and so we don't want you to be overwhelmed because we're going to go over a lot of stuff and it will be probably overwhelming, but just try to apply just, you know, a few things as God leads, and you don't have to do everything and you certainly don't have to do everything all at once. So if you can walk away with two or three things that you want to change, things you want to implement in your home, then I think that would be time well spent here today. And so one quick exercise here this morning is just off the top of your head, what do you think would make the biggest difference in your parenting? Similar question. Did you fill in this blank? The very best thing we could do for our kids is blank. Or I know I should blank. If you take just 60 seconds and answer, I don't know, maybe two of those at least. If you could do that on your handout. Don't overthink it, just off the top of your head. Okay, we'll come back to that in a few minutes. So last night we finished off just talking about the importance of faith and believing that God sees what you do and that it matters to Him, believing that it makes a difference in our kids' lives as we parent well, believing that as we build into our kids that that's something worth doing, that it's worthwhile, just like your job's worthwhile, or ministry's worthwhile. It's worth building into your kids because it changes the world. And so we talked about that and how we just kind of ended on this thought of, hey, it really comes down to you. Parenting's not about changing your kid, but it really has to start with you changing yourself as the parent. And so I want to think about that a little bit here in this first session this morning and think about, okay, so how do I do that? What's that look like? And I want to start off kind of going back to the puzzle. Remember the puzzle that was being built? It had the hot air balloons, and then it had some big missing chunks in the puzzle. And it's like, okay, well, as parents, what are these big missing chunks? And I want to think about some people that I've seen as I've observed families over time. And I think of the Proverbs 22:6, to train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not turn from it. And times that I've seen that have kind of challenged that. And I think sometimes in my mind, I think, well, all these families were good Christian families, and they were doing great, and then their children just kind of went off the deep end, and so that's hard to make that fit with what the Bible says there in Proverbs 22:6. But when I actually stop and I think about those families, sometimes I get a little bit of a different picture, and so I want to just share some of those stories with you guys. There was this family that we knew who seemed to be doing pretty well with their kids. They really had a heart for the Lord and the small group leaders and really running for Jesus. And the wife seemed to be kind of wrestling through a few things. And one day she just called up my wife and said, I'm done. I'm done going to church and I'm just done. And so she quit going to our church. She quit going to church altogether. I think eventually she did go back. But basically, I don't even know exactly what happened, but you can imagine that really had an impact on her kids, as they saw the faith of their mother start to flounder. I've known a couple of different families who had their kids involved in sports, and I'm not against sports. Sports is fine, but they just seemed to really idolize sports, and sports became everything about what they did. And so they passed on this real love for sports to their kids, to the point that when the kids became teenagers and got into their upper teens, it seemed like almost like they didn't really love God, and they just kind of quit doing God stuff and church stuff, and they didn't love God. They loved their sport, and they loved their physical appearance and their body and their health, and it's like, okay, well, that's kind of weird, but it's not really shocking. It's kind of what was passed on to the kids, and so a couple families I look at were like that. Sometimes you do see a family who seems like they're doing really well, and then the kids kind of tube out later in life, but I've known a number of families who their teenage children have really been a challenge, kind of a nightmare, to put it a little more bluntly. But some of those families, it really wasn't surprising because, yeah, when they're 17, they're a nightmare, but actually, when they were 13 and we had them in Sunday school, they were a nightmare then. And back when they were 8 and they were in Sunday school, they were a nightmare. And in fact, pretty much since they were in the nursery, we've seen them running around and pulling hair and biting kids and cussing and doing all these things. And it's like, okay, this is no surprise. This is the trajectory they've been on for years, and they're just continuing down this trajectory. And so I think in cases like that, we want to be careful in saying, well, they went to church, and yet their kids didn't turn out. It's like, okay, well, there's more to the story than that. And so there are just lots of stories like that where there have been, you know, alcoholism and divorce and just love of the world, flirting with the world, suicide, just half-heartedness in following God on behalf of the parents who released their kids to the world too soon, affairs, all kinds of different things that dramatically impact the family. And so when we look at all these situations, it's not just as simple as saying, well, hey, they followed God's ways and God's ways didn't work, and so these kids didn't turn out well. In a lot of them, we can look at it and say, it almost really didn't even have anything to do with parenting. Just the parents weren't doing well. And so when I say parenting's about the parent, it's like, as a parent, it's not just I need to parent well, but it really does need to start with me. I need to be in a good spot. I've got to be in a good spot. As a couple, we've got to be in a good spot. And it's like the thing on the airplane when they say, hey, when the gas mask falls down, put it on your,
The gas mask?
The oxygen mask. That keeps you from all the gases in the plane. So when it falls down, you put it over your nose, and then you help your kid, right? And so it's the same thing. It's like, okay, if we're trying to raise godly kids, well, that really needs to start with us. And so we really must win with our own life first. That's our starting place. Luke 6:40 says, a student is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. If I was going to teach you guitar, how to be a good guitar player, what would be important about me? Well, I would need to be a good guitar player. Hey, I would need to know how to play guitar. I would at least need to be a step in front of you in my ability. Otherwise, I couldn't do that. And so the same thing, you're trying to raise a spiritual warrior, you need to be a spiritual warrior yourself. Which I know is like, oh, I don't know about that. I'm not that. I understand that. I understand we're inadequate in that, but aspire to that. Be like, oh, okay, if I really want to help my kids, I need to go before them. I need to get into a really good spot and pursue that, and that will be one of the best things you can do for your kids. I want to encourage you to do what you know that you need to do. So we have a parenting website. Sometimes people will email in and they'll ask us questions about parenting and get advice. Every once in a while, we'll get a phone call. I used to get a lot of emails like this back when I actually answered the emails, and I don't get quite as many. But I'll give you a sample of one here. And this is just a fictitious one, but it's pretty similar to many that I've received. And this lady writes in, she says, my 13-year-old is having a hard time. I can't quite read with the light there. My 13-year-old's having a hard time. He is struggling in school. I've gotten a few calls from some of his teachers. Today, the principal called. His grades are not too bad, but he keeps getting into fights and makes teachers upset. I know I need to be stricter, but it's just so hard. Yesterday, I caught him putting something into his backpack. When I asked him what it was, he quickly grabbed it and stomped out of the room without answering. I don't think he's doing drugs, but I know his friend from Colorado smokes pot. A little Colorado dig there. His stepdad gets him on the weekends, and he lets my son stay up late and watch movies that are violent. His stepdad loses his temper a lot as well. What do you think I should do? You can imagine how much fun it is to answer emails like that, because it's like, I have no idea. I mean, that is so complicated. There is a lot of stuff that's going on there where, you know, we have the step-parent. The step-parent's not a good influence, has a different vision for the kid, and that's very common, right? And then we have the school, and it seems like she's not maybe totally confident that the school's really calling it right, and so how do you know if the school's right or if the kid's really having a hard time, and you're trying to sort through this. And so a lot of times when I get emails like this, what I look to see is if they already answered the question themselves. And so I go back to the first part of that, and I look at it, and she said, I know I need to be stricter. Okay, well, I don't know much about the situation. I don't know this lady. All I know is what she told me, and what she told me is that she already realizes that she needs to be stricter. And so I look at that, and it's like, okay, well, that's kind of interesting, because now you're emailing out some guy that you don't know, trying to get input on what you can do with your kids, and he doesn't have a clue either, but you're saying you already know something. And for me, I just write back, it's like, well, I don't really know your situation, but seems like you need to be stricter, because that's what you said. And it's almost like God already put this on your heart. And so instead of, you know, okay, well, what are five other things I could change? It's like, oh, let's start there. Now, what do you do? How can you be stricter? What does that look like when it comes to education? What's that look like at home? What's that look like in terms of chores and disobedience and discipline? And let's start with what God has already given us. And so for you guys, that's why we did this little exercise. Really, all three of those points there were supposed to bring out that same idea. The question is, did God already put something on your heart? Maybe some of you sat there and you're like, I don't really know. But some of you might have wrote down something like, I need to be stricter. I need to spend more time with my kids. I need to be more gentle. I need to quit losing my temper. It's like, okay, well, if God's put that on your heart, then make sure you don't walk away from here with 20 other things you need to do. Work on that area that God's already given you. Start there. One time I gave this conference, and there was a guy that was like, I almost walked out at that point, not because I was upset, but just, it's like, yeah, that's what I needed to hear today. And that's, I hope you feel a little like that, like, okay, yeah, that's what I need to do. I need to do what God has already given me. So if you want to do something that really makes a difference, do the thing that God has already led you in and put in your heart. I encourage you to be an outstanding example. 1 Timothy 4:12 says, don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. And in this, it's not like, oh, we're just putting on a show in front of the kids, we're going to act this way, but separately we'll be different. But we're trying to be spiritual warriors, and so we're leading out. We're trying to be at least a step in front of them in where we're going with our life, hopefully a lot more than that. And so be example in what you're doing. So look at a few different areas, I think, of just in the TV and movies that we have going on in our homes. It's really easy to not live in a way as to what's best for us, what's best for our family, what's best for our kids, but just what do we want to do? What's relaxing to us? What's enjoyable? Or one time I went into a movie theater. I think it was when the first Lord of the Rings came out. And I walked into the theater with a friend of mine, and there was a guy from church who was standing there with his kid, and his kid was 6 years old. And I could tell right away he was really uncomfortable, and we're standing in line just like three people away. And he's like, oh, hey, how you doing? And he's kind of squirming a little bit. Yeah, you're probably wondering why I'm here with my six-year-old. You might be thinking that this movie's too violent. And I'm like, okay, I'm trying really hard not to be judgmental, but yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. And he's pretty mature for his age, and he can handle this. And he's trying to explain this, and he watches a lot more violent things at home. I'm like, oh, well, good. I'm really encouraged about that. I feel a lot better about the whole situation. And he's going on and on. It's like, okay, I know what's going on here. It's, you really wanted to watch this movie, and you told your wife, hey, I want to go see Lord of the Rings. And she's like, oh, well, I was hoping you'd spend time with your son. Oh, well, that's okay. I can bring him with me, not because it's the best thing, but because I really want to see the movie. And it's just easy to make choices like that, right? And we make excuses in our mind just because I just really want to do it, not because it's really the best thing. And so we want to be careful in things like that. That's so understandable. There's so many things like that that are fun for us to watch and enjoyable, relaxing. We get caught up in the plot line and all that stuff. But is it really the best? Are we doing what's best for our kids in what we watch in the home? With anger, you know, for yelling at the kids all the time or yelling at one another or just losing it for no particular reason. Well, we need to set an example in things like that. If you want your child to be a man of God or a woman of God, you need to be that yourself in the way that you control your own emotions, in your character. And so it really does start with working with us. Think of the example of swearing. Swearing is a real struggle for a lot of people. I'm not really around swearing very much, and so it's not something that has been a big deal for me. It would be more challenging if I was around it. I remember when our oldest went to public school, went to ninth grade, and he was in gym class, and I don't know what they were doing, but he came home. He's like, Dad, I need to confess something. I'm like, okay, what's that? He goes, well, I said a cuss word in my head. What do you mean you said a cuss word in your head? Like, I thought a cuss word. Like, good job, son, you know? I guess it's like, when I was your age, I might have actually let a few of those slip out by that time. But, you know, he was in a different environment where he hadn't been around that at all, and so that was helpful to him. We had some friends that, I think one of my friends posted this on Facebook, but basically he had been building something and, you know, like hit his thumb with a hammer and had let out a not-so-choice word. And, you know, it was like the F-bomb or something. It's kind of a big one. And his kid was in the room. And he looked over and the kid was like playing with Legos or something. He's like, okay, whew, got away with it. And, all right, I want to be careful that I don't let that happen again. And then grandma came to visit. And suddenly the kid, that was like, that was the only word he knew. And he just kept repeating that. So you want to be careful because they are watching and imitating. And this is going to sound a little bit extreme, but I want to think about even like euphemisms, like words that we use as slang and kind of in exchange for swear words. And just to get a picture of keeping a high standard, in our home, we try not to have any euphemisms. And so it's not like, well, instead of saying the S word, I'm going to say shoot. Because it's like, well, just why say anything there at all? What's the purpose of doing that? And we try not to say, oh my gosh, because that's short for oh my God. I know that sounds really extreme to some people, and I'm not going to judge you if I'm talking to you later on and you say that, or, you know, OMG in our text or whatever, because it's just kind of a form of swearing. It's just kind of empty talk. And so our kids are always trying to figure out, okay, what's appropriate and what's not. And they'll come up and they'll be like, Dad, I got a question for you. Is it okay to say holy guacamole? And I'm like, well, you know, part of me is like, yeah, it's fine. Let's not go overboard on this whole thing. And then part of me is like, the whole word holy means set apart. It's like a special word that almost should be saved for special occasions. So it's almost like it defiles the word to use it for just something that's meaningless. And so no, let's not say holy guacamole. Just, you know, why do we need to go there? Again, I know that sounds really strange, and as a speaker, I know that that distances me from the audience. So why am I sharing that? Because I want you to understand that I'm raising a child of God. And when I think of God raising a child, I don't see him doing those things. I don't see just, oh, yeah, let's be a little bit loose. For a child of God, there's going to be a standard of holiness. It's like, you're a child of the King. Yeah, other people say this, and it's not a big deal, and don't judge them for it, but you're a child of the King. We don't talk that way. Does that make sense? And so with my kids, it's like, well, they're also children of God. And so I want to train them in just extreme holiness. And our older kids go out and they go to college and they hear this stuff and they start using stuff, not real bad things, but even with our older kids, they come back, it's like, hey, you know, not in our house. We don't do holy guacamole here, you know, or whatever, you know. Just why be harsh with our speech? Let's speak as children of God. So I hope that makes sense. I'm not trying to be extreme. I know I kind of am, but I just want a level of holiness in my own speech and in my kids' speech. And then when grandma comes, no one gets embarrassed or offended. And so, big picture, with our family, with our home, and with our lives, is we want to have something going on that's worth imitating. That they look to our lives and they're like, oh, we want to be like you. We don't want them to look at us and be like, oh, you guys are hypocrites and you say all this churchy God stuff, but I see how you live. We don't want that. We want them to see that our home is something special, that we're something special, that God has done something in our lives. And when our kids see our home, we want them to be like, this is so cool. And sometimes I think we do the opposite. It's like, well, home is really strict and dry and boring, and we have all this God stuff and Bible stuff, and it's really not that much fun, but the world, man, the world is exciting. I don't want that. I want them to see the world's exciting, but it's also scary and sinful and destructive. The thief comes to steal and kill and destroy, but Jesus came so that we could have life. What kind of life? A dry, boring life? No, life to the full. And I want them to see that in our lives, and I want them to experience that in our home. And so we want the beautiful home surrounded by evil, not the boring, dry home surrounded by fun and enticing things. I want to encourage you guys to keep growing. 2 Peter 1:5 through 8 says, for this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they'll keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. So already this morning, you might be a little overwhelmed, like, oh, I'm supposed to be a spiritual warrior. I can't be a spiritual warrior. And if that's what it takes to raise kids well, then I'm a loser and I can't do this. And you might already feel defeated. That's why I love this verse, because it says, if you have these things in increasing measure, they'll keep you from being ineffective and unproductive. In other words, if you're growing in these things, you'll be effective and productive in your Christianity as a Christian, as a parent. That's really cool, because you don't have to be super successful. You could have been on crack last week, and you could just cuss up a storm with, you know, the best of them, and you could still be struggling with drinking, and you could have all kinds of things that you're wrestling with. But if you're growing, you're going to be effective and productive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. Actually, the scary thing is, if you've been following Jesus for 20 years, but you're stagnant and you're not growing, well, that's scary. You're in trouble. The one that's struggling but growing, man, this verse gives you a lot of hope. If you're stagnant, then that's scary. And so the point here is not that you have to be perfect and you have to have the same standards of speech and anger and movies and TVs as us or as other people. It's like, you just need to be growing. If you're growing, you're going to do okay, and you're setting a great example for your kids. You need to put Jesus first in your life. Matthew 6:33 says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. That's just a great standard for your own life. It starts with you. If you need to be doing well, run everything you're doing in your life by this. What does it look like for me to put Jesus first? Be committed to your church family. Ephesians 4:16 says, from him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. And there's this picture here of the church family growing together and building itself up in love as we're working together. And I just think that is so healthy for us personally as parents. And it's obviously a great environment for our kids as well. And so we want to be part of a church where other parents are trying to follow God, other parents are trying to be warriors for Jesus and trying to raise warriors who can stand strong in this world. Hebrews 10:25 says, let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. I want to just encourage you guys to make that a priority, to be involved and committed to a church. Be committed to a church family because it's your family. And if it's not this church, that's fine. Be committed somewhere. I'm not saying you have to be committed right here and you can never. It's not like that. But you need to be committed somewhere because it's the family outside your family. Find a group of people you want to run life with and be committed to that group. You know, one thing that I've noticed is there are just thousands and thousands of parenting books out there. My book is called Premeditated Parenting, which is kind of a weird title, but you should try to come up with a book title yourself. And then go onto Amazon and see if someone else has already come up with that title. It's not easy. Every title you can think of is already taken because there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of books on parenting. And one thing that's challenging is you don't know any of those people and you don't know their principles. And you know, you don't know, is this really working in their home? And that's one of the things I love about the church family is I can learn from people, I can follow the scripture, but I can see how that's played out in different people's lives. And they can have some great advice, and I can look at their kids and be like, okay, is that working? Well, okay, I can see some stuff working and some stuff isn't. And I just think it's really helpful to be in a body where you're learning and growing from each other and from people who you know and they know you. And I think that has impacted us greatly. Kind of like that picture with the home that was the beautiful home. Your church environment, your church experience needs to be something beautiful for the kids where they're like, hey, this is cool. I get to be a part, and this is fun, and this is something I want to do, something I want to give my life to. I think that's a big deal. I remember we visited a church one time. It's the church I grew up in, and we were doing worship, and one of the kids kind of pulled on me. And I'm like, yeah, what do you want? And I'm like, Dad. Why do people go here? Because to that kid, I was like, this is so dead. This is not joy-filled at all. And you know, and part of it's just it was an older church and stuff. But it's like, that is not the impression you want to give your kids. I encourage you to prioritize your marriage. Malachi 2:15 says, has not the Lord made them one in flesh and spirit? They are his. And why one? Because he was seeking godly offspring. So guard yourself in your spirit. Do not break faith with a wife of your youth. So God could have had a number of different plans for reproduction, and yet he has this plan of husband and a wife together and building into their kids. And this verse asks that question, why one? Why did he do it this way? Because he was seeking godly offspring. In other words, because this is what would be the very best for the kids, is to have that, to have mom and dad. And so when we think about what's really good for the kids, one of the things that's really, really good for the kids is for you guys as a couple to be united and committed to one another. In that, I know we have some single moms, maybe some single dads in here too. And I want to praise you. You guys are awesome. And just, it's an incredible amount of work, even as a couple. I can't even imagine doing it on my own. And so thanks for the work that you do. And it's challenging. I think of Luke 1:37. I think an angel's talking to Mary there, and he says, for nothing is impossible with God. So as hard as it is and as challenging as it is to do it on your own, I would cling to some verses like that of where it's like, man, God can help. And do the best that you can, and in faith, trust that God is going to help you out and that things are going to go okay. But for those who are married, I want to encourage you, you know, really protect and prioritize that marriage. Must be willing to change your paradigm. By default, our paradigm is formed by our own upbringing, and that makes life a little bit challenging when we're raising kids because maybe the paradigm that we have isn't really the best picture of good parenting. So I want to show you guys a video clip. It's of a guy, I can't remember his name, but it's a viral video known as Boom Goes the Dynamite. I'm not going to show you the whole thing because it's so long and so painful. And you'll see what I mean in just a second. But let's watch this clip.
At 3 p.m. Switching to Ball State men's tennis, it seems last week player on... It seems every week they have a player... Matt Lawrence is the latest Cardinals tennis player to win the award. Lamar won all the singles and doubles matches last week. So far, the Cardinals have had a player honored on the weekly awards. Seven out of the nine weeks. The Cards will play at Boise State Invite this weekend. The Indiana Pacers are looking for a measure of revenge tonight against the New Jersey Nets and to strengthen their playoff hopes. The Nets won the last Sunday's matchup 94-85, which left the Pacers one game behind the Chicago in the seventh series spot. Let's check out the highlights. Steven Jackson's David. Reggie Miller's looking good. He shoots a three, and it's good. Later, he gets the rebound, passes it to the man, shoots it, and boom goes the dynamite.
I really like that video. Part of just that's how I feel as a public speaker sometimes. But you wouldn't go to this guy for advice, right, on how to be a good sportscaster. You wouldn't do it. But the funny thing is, I think that's the level of expertise that our world offers people in parenting. And, you know, you can go and get your haircut and you pick up the parenting magazine and it's like, oh, here's some good parenting advice. And we look and we read it as if it's actually valuable. I mean, that's amazing that we would do that. Because it's like going to him and saying, so what do you think I should do? Yeah, I'm going to do this sports thing. And do you have any tips for me? I mean, you can learn from his mistakes, but he's not the one that you should go to for advice. And we do that all the time with the world. And we need to understand that God has something very different. And go to God and not to the world. Kathleen was listening to a Christian radio station one day, and they came on, they're like, oh, this next speaker that we have up is great, and she's really impacted Christianity, and so many of us go to her for parenting advice, and they go on and on praising this, and Kathleen's getting kind of excited. Well, who is this? Have I heard of this person? And they go on and on, and next up is Super Nanny. Like, Super Nanny? She's not even a Christian as far as I know. She's not even a parent. And yet on our Christian radio station, she's promoted as someone who's really helpful to Christians and giving advice on raising kids. I'll agree, she has some stuff that's good and valuable, but I'm just saying it's like going to the boom goes the dynamite guy to get advice. Because it's like, how do you know if this is really true or if this is really valuable? Same Christian radio station, I heard a thing where the DJ got on and she's like, oh, I talked to my doctor the other day and we were talking about tantrums and he gave me some advice. It was really good. He said, if your kid throws a tantrum, he just wants attention. So you just ignore the tantrum. Tantrum goes away and goes on. And it was like, it was the most amazing creative advice. I'm like, I've heard that advice since back when I was a kid. And even then I knew it was bad advice. And it's like, okay, go to your doctor when your kid breaks his arm or something. Why would you go to your doctor for parenting advice? Did they cover that in med school? I'm not sure. That's kind of interesting. And I'm not trying to be mean, but it's just, that's bad advice. Because, sure, you're right, it'll stop that behavior because they do want attention, but did it ever deal with the rebellion? The Bible talks a lot about rebellion. Did we deal with that? We know a kid who was 13 or 14, and this kid was being dropped off for school, and he didn't want to get out of the car. I don't know, he had a bad hair day or had been crying or something, but for some reason, he's like, I'm not getting out of the car. And Dad's like, hey, you need to get out of the car. No, I don't want to get out of the car. You need to get out of the car. No, you can't make me get out of the car. Get out of the car now. And it goes back and forth like that a few times, and he puts his feet up against the windshield and kicks the windshield out of the car. Well, I mean, yeah, he's not throwing a tantrum in the form of sitting on the floor kicking and screaming like a 2 or 3 year old, but he's still throwing a tantrum. You know, maybe you dealt with the behavior, but did you deal with the rebellion? And so we want to be careful about who we're getting advice from. What paradigm are we going by? Your own upbringing is likely to shape you more than anything else. And that's really scary, because how do you get around that? I don't know that I have a great answer for that. I just know it's kind of scary. We knew a small group leader one time who had done a small group series on loving your kids, and then talked about loving your kids and how important it was, and talked about how you need to hug them and you need to kiss them, you need to say the words "I love you," and so on and so forth. Fast forward 10 years or so, and his kid's a teenager, and his kid's going through a hard time, and is sitting on my couch. And I'm talking to him like, "Hey, how's it going? What's going on? Why are you having a hard time?" And he talks to me for a while, and so I ask, it's like, "Well, do you know that your dad loves you?" "Yeah, I guess so." I'm like, "Okay, you know, let's not do the teen thing with me. Let's be serious. Do you know that he loves you?" "Yeah." I mean, okay, has he actually said, "I love you"? Let's start there. Let's be real basic. "I don't know." I'm about ready to strangle him at this point. It's like, come on. Has he said, "I love you"? Because of course he did. "Maybe." "Okay, forget it. I'll just talk to your dad." So I talked to dad. I'm like, "Hey, I had this conversation with your son." And he had done this small group all about love. And, "Did you ever tell your son that you love him?" "Yeah? I'm pretty sure." "How many times did you tell your son you love him?" "Well, I don't know, probably 2 or 3. "Ever?" "You should be telling me you love him 2 or 3 times a day. I heard your talk. I heard you do this whole small group on this." What's going on in that guy's thinking? Because he knows the information, right? He knows you should love your kids, and he knows you should communicate love to your kids. Well, what he's thinking is, "I wish my dad would have said, 'I love you,' to me 2 or 3 times. I've communicated that so much more clearly than my dad did. You know, my kid is just being self-centered, and that he would think that I haven't communicated love to him." I mean, because it's just, he's comparing it to his own upbringing. And so he's been way over the top in expressing love. That's scary. That's scary to me, that we can be so shaped by our own upbringing. And so how do we get around that? And I think one of the ways we get around that is that we need the input of other people. Proverbs 20:11 says, "Even a child is known by his actions, by whether his conduct is pure and right." If we were here with our kids and you got to meet them before church, within 60 seconds probably, you would have a feel. You'd be like, "Yeah, these kids are a little wild," or "These kids are obedient," or "They're well-behaved," or "They're not." Or you would just form an opinion pretty quickly. And maybe in, I don't know, 20 minutes or so, you would have a pretty good gut feel. Somehow, just a child is known by his actions. But the weird thing is, even though we can assess how other people's kids are doing, it's really hard to assess our own kids and to call that correctly. And so we really need to get the input of other people. And that's where a church is so valuable. You need input from other people in your small group, and when your kid's in the nursery or in Sunday school, or from their teachers if they're in public school or whatever. You need to know how your kids are doing. Get their opinion. Just ask them, how are they doing? What's something we can work on? What can we change? Because they may be calling it a lot more correctly than you would. We need to go to God. Of course, God is the best source of parenting advice. 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. "As all scriptures God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work." We talked about Ephesians 2:10 last night and about how God has given us good works to do. One of the good works that we have to do is that work of raising our kids, raising the kids that God has entrusted to us, doing a good job with them. And so this says that God's scripture equips us to do that work, every good work that he has for us. And if that's one of the good works, then it equips us for that work. How does it equip us? At what level? It kind of helps? Sort of helpful? No, it thoroughly equips us. James 1:5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him." And so we need to go to God. If we don't know what to do in our parenting, don't even just grab one of the books off the table or turn to the latest parenting magazine or whatever. You need to go to the Lord and seek him. And so it's not a matter of just finding the right information, but you need to seek the Lord. With our older kids, this has been super important. is that our there's not always a verse on what we want. Like, I can't look up youth group in the Bible and find that. You know, how to deal with a rebellious teen. It's hard to find that specific verse. Sometimes we're just going to God and crying out, God, we're struggling with this with our kid. How do we help our kid in this? You must be a seeker of God yourself. And I'll let Kathleen just share some of her experiences in seeking God related to parenting.
So when we lived in Colorado, I was kind of buried in babies, basically. And we had kids 12 and under at that time. And then when we moved to El Paso, kind of life started changing, and the kids started getting into the teen years. And about that time, Steve and I had worked out that with the kids being homeschooled, that there would be a little opportunity for me to be able to walk every morning and just kind of get out and pray. And God really began using that time in my life. That's kind of when we have been doing these truth packs for years, but I kind of started these personal truth packs. And they were just verses that maybe I would hear during church, that I would hear during small group, verses that were encouraging to me in my quiet time. And I just started writing them down. And I would walk every morning. I would not every morning, but I would try to get out several times a week and just be meditating on these verses. And in that time, the Lord really started doing a work in my life and using the scripture to really meet me where I was at that day with the needs of the kids. And it would be like a verse that I wouldn't even think of as a parenting verse, but when I would be out on the ditch and walking and praying, I'd be like, wait a second, that's what I've been praying about. That's what I've been stressed about. That's what I've been trying to figure out. And I would come home and I'd be like, Stephen, look at this verse. And it was just like God was just really meeting me personally with the kids and things that I was wrestling with. And it became, you know, once I got a taste of that, I'm like, man, this is awesome. God really, you know, it says all scripture is God breathed and is useful to us. But it really became like, almost like blinders were taken off my eyes. I had kind of, before that, I had these verses in mothering that were encouraging to me, but it was all over the place in the scripture. And, you know, I was taking things out of context right and left and applying it to my mothering because it was like, this is the answer to what we're talking about. And so it really encouraged Steve and I just to really seek the Lord. He wants to give answers. He doesn't want this to be a mystery. He wants to direct us in our parenting. And I became very excited and confident that God wanted to give us answers to what we were going through. And the more we personally experienced that, and of course, Steve was, you know, we were talking a lot about the kids. Every day we talk a lot about the kids, and even the night before we came, it's like, okay, I'm worried about this one kid, and da-da-da-da-da. And Steve's like, okay, we need to talk about that more, and we need to process what we're going to do with that kid. So it's ongoing with eight. There's always someone to worry about, if not two to worry about. But boy, God's desire is for us to seek him and for him to personally meet us and give us those answers, and that it increases our faith and builds up our faith.
That's good. That's good. So we need to seek God ourselves. I think sometimes we just kind of, we seek what other people have already learned. It's like the bird that goes and eats the worm, then regurgitates it to the baby bird. It's kind of gross, right? I think we do that a lot in Christianity. We go and try to learn what somebody else got from God. Let me go find out what they say in their book. Okay, that can be helpful. It's good to get other people's advice, but make sure you're seeking God yourself and not just getting other people's regurgitated God wisdom. We need to be willing to set our own course, and just to understand here, if you're going to do things differently than others, because parenting is so personal, that's going to be offensive. People that don't do the same thing you do are going to be upset. If you're a little bit stricter, they're going to think that means that you don't think they're strict enough. If you do a different schooling option, they're going to think that you're judging them for the way that they school their kids. If you do things differently than the way you were raised, your parents are going to think, what, the way we raised you wasn't good enough? You know, you've got to be willing to set your own course. This is how God is leading us, and this is what we're going to do. And if you want to have a different opinion, that's fine, but we're going to stick to this course. He must be willing to do what's best. We'll wrap it up here in just a second. But that's hard to do sometimes. Sometimes we empathize with our kids. Sometimes we're, you know, like with little kids, they'll be fussing and having a hard time and not obeying well. And we'll be like, oh, he's really tired. And it's really hard for me to make good choices when I'm tired. He had his shots today. And oh, yeah, it's really hard for me when I'm hurt and I've had a hard day. And, you know, they'll disobey and we'll say, oh, yeah, well, I don't always obey God 100% either. It's like, oh, okay, I can appreciate that, but be careful about being overly empathetic. You can empathize, but you still need to do what's right. I went to the cardiologist a year ago or so, and I waited in the waiting room for an hour and a half or so. And then I went back into the exam room and waited there another hour and a half or so. And no one came and talked to me. No one said, hey, he's running late, he's saving lives, anything like that. I could hear him out talking to other people. And after 3 hours and 15 minutes, I'm like, man, I got youth group tonight. I need to go home and work on that. And I had already, you know, like written three sermons and done a bunch of other stuff while I was sitting there for 3 hours and 15 minutes. I just ran out of stuff to do. It's like, I got to go home. And so I went to leave, and it was 5:15, and all the staff was gone. I stood at the desk, and no one's there. And finally, someone looks at me, and they were already in their street clothes. They're like, can I help you? I'm like, yeah, I just need to leave and reschedule, and I'm not upset or anything. Well, you're in the wrong place. I'm like, okay, well. And so she told me where to go, and so I talked to this other person, and she kind of checked me out and stuff. She didn't apologize or anything either or explain the situation. No one had came in and said, he's running late. I hadn't gotten any feedback or anything. I still got billed $50 for the appointment. And so when I got the bill, I went down to the doctor's office and I killed him. No, I didn't do that. But we can appreciate that, right? We can empathize with the situation and say, oh, that really angers me. That stirs me up to... But it doesn't excuse our actions. Same thing with our kids. We can empathize with them, but we still have to help them make the right choice and discipline them when they need it. We need to do the right thing even when we're tired. Sometimes it's hard to discipline our kids. Sometimes it's hard to be the authority. Sometimes it's even hard to ask our kids to do the right thing because we're afraid they won't, and then we'll have to intervene and do something. And so we just don't ask them to do anything. You know, we just play it safe. I remember... There was a guy who had invited me over to his house to kind of observe his parenting. And so we're just sitting there talking. And his kid was playing with curtains, and he had a standard that you don't play with curtains as we do. And so he said, hey, I want you to stop touching the curtains. And so the kid stopped and was just kind of playing with Legos next to the curtains and kept kind of bumping up against the curtains. And he recognized that that was intentional and that was defiance. And he said, you need to quit touching the curtains and move the Legos away from the curtains so that you're not touching the curtains. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I'm doing that. And moved all the Legos away except one, and then went to go get that Lego. And it's like the curtains are right here and the Lego's here. Instead of just walking up and picking up the Lego, this kid goes and goes between the curtain and the Lego and bends down and picks up the Lego and rear end touches the curtain. And he called it correctly. He saw it. It's like, that's rebellion. You touched the curtain, and I asked you not. He saw it. And he said, quit touching the curtains. And then she left the room. Like, okay, that was good. You saw it. You called it. But you didn't do anything about it. You didn't discipline. You didn't correct. Why? Because he's been working all day, and he's tired and didn't want to get off the couch. And so sometimes we need to overcome ourselves and do the right thing, even when it's hard, even when we're tired. We need to do the right thing even when we don't get to be the friend or the nice guy. Our kids were becoming infatuated with fiction books, and it just seemed like at some points, like, they really love fiction and dragons and fantasy and all this stuff, and they're talking about it all the time, but kind of more than they're talking about God. It seemed kind of weird. And so for a while, I just banned the fiction from our home. Like, okay, we're done with that for a while. It's probably a year, year and a half, something like that. And people would hear that story and be like, wow, that's kind of mean. Why would you do that? And it's like, well, I had my reasons. I had thoughts, and I just thought it was best for our home. And it wasn't popular with my kids. It wasn't popular with my wife. It wasn't popular with other people we've told about. It might not be popular with you guys. You might be like, well, that's way too authoritarian. Like, well, that's why God gave me the authority. Is so that I could use it. And you don't have to agree, but it's like, it's not popular, but I just felt like that was the right thing in our family. And so sometimes we have to say no, even when it's not popular. With the friends that our kids play with, sometimes we have to make choices. Just you can't play with that friend. No, they can't come over. No, you can't go over to their house. That can be really, really, really hard. We met some new neighbors one time. They weren't like immediate, you know, like right next to us, but we met the neighbors and saw their kids, and we walked away from the time. It's like, our kids are never going to play with those kids. They're just not. Could that be offensive at some point? Yes, it could. Am I okay with that? Yeah, because I just want to be really careful. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, don't be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. And I want to be really careful with that. Be careful with media. I just skipped that. Be careful when you need a break. We need to do the right thing even when we're tired. Even when we're tired, like, I just need a break. It's like, I can appreciate that. Things get really hard. But we still need to do the right thing. And there are times when it's like, man, we need to be there for our kids. And sometimes the best thing, most of the times the best thing, is for you to be there with your kids. And not daycare or not a babysitter or not someone else. Sometimes those people are helpful. Right now, you have your kids somewhere, that's fine. I mean, we have to do that sometimes. But be careful about doing that too much because we're tired. It's like, I just need to be there. As the parent, that's my role. I need to be there. And so let's end this session. We're running a little bit late. And we're going to have a breakout session. And let's do that at 10:20.